Jerry, if you'll come up, we're happy to have all of our missionaries here this morning. Jerry's going to give us a report, and I'll turn it over to him.
Okay. Well, good morning. It's good to be here with all of you. A lot of you, I don't know if you were here then, but 5-6 years ago when we were first still planning and dreaming about going to Turkey, the fellowship here in San Marcos was the first fellowship to partner with us, to fellowship with us in that vision that we had of going to Turkey. And you've been faithful ever since then, faithful partners, faithful brothers and sisters in Christ. So we really appreciate that and want to let you know just how much of a joy that is for us and how excited we are to be back with you, to share with you what the Lord has done through your prayers and through what we've been able to do there too. But it's really the Lord's work, and we're thankful to have partners like you in that process. There's a lot of things that have happened. I'll try to give you a quick summary. I think our kids have already exited. My wife, Sarah, is here, and our youngest son, Gabriel. So if you get a chance, you can see them later on. And if you have any questions, I'll try to field them then. But I want to just get into talking a bit about what the Lord has done in the last 2 years that we've been in Turkey. There's been a lot of things that have happened. Some very dramatic things, some very exciting things. I wish I could say, like Craig, that we're planning work on another church, and this church is already patched up and ready to go, but it doesn't go that fast in Turkey. We're hopeful and really trust that the Lord has a plan and that things are going to move forward as they are even now. Now, we did have a great time a couple weeks ago. A month ago, was it, Randy? With Randy out visiting us. So that was really special. Thanks for sending him along. And we also had a great time with James Magana when he came, I think it was last summer. And that was great, too. So we appreciate having people coming and going because that gives you all a better taste of what we're doing and a personal connection with the ministry over there as you're part and parcel of that. But here, let me just get into a little bit of our life in Diyarbakir in southeastern Turkey. My wife and I have been there for 6 years now. And this is the southeastern corner of the country of Turkey. Turkey's a large country, about 75 million. A lot of people there, and the vast majority of them are unreached in the sense that they've never heard a clear presentation of the gospel. They know about Christianity, but in very different terms than you and I would describe it. So the vast majority of them are 99% Muslim, and yet they also know very little about Islam. They're basically agnostics or atheists, however you like to put it. So it's quite a sad situation where they just pay lip service to Islam, but they really have no idea what they believe in. They just believe it because their grandfathers have always told them that's what they have to believe in. So this is the country where we live, out in the southeastern part of the country. There's a lot of biblical sites, really neat places. The Tigris River goes right through our city, and the Euphrates isn't too far away. So you can guess that the Garden of Eden is just a little north of us there in the mountains. We went up with Randy to try to find Mount Ararat. Here's the backside of Randy you probably don't usually get to see. And I even got better ones. Here's Randy trying to find stuff to smuggle out of the country. Here's Randy trying to find something for his wife. But really, we had a great time with Randy, spending time just traveling, talking, chatting, and so we got a chance to hear about how things are going here in San Marcos. So it was a great privilege there being together. We live in Diyarbakir, which is a very old city. The walls themselves go back about 3,000 or 4,000 years. Within the city walls, there used to be even a lot of Christians living. Just about 100 years ago, there was an equal amount of Christians and Muslims living in the city. And those are old Assyrian Orthodox or Armenian Orthodox Christians, most of which have now fled, have left. Many were deported, many were killed in the Armenian Holocaust, if you want to read up on that. But their silent testimonies to their existence still remain. This is an ancient church, Armenian Orthodox Church. You can see it probably seats easily about 1,000 people. And it's quite amazing to walk through the city and see dozens, literally dozens of these kind of churches and the remains. Many of them have been turned into mosques. So we can see that the Lord had worked there in a really marvelous way. And then you ask yourself the question, well, what happened? Well, obviously, there's a history side of it. But the spiritual side of it is that they failed on the Great Commission. They failed to pass along the goods. The Lord really blessed them in an incredible way. They were very wealthy. They were very successful. And yet they didn't see their neighbors, their Kurdish neighbors or Turkish neighbors, worthy of the gospel. And so the Lord didn't see them worthy of it either. And in the season, they were forced to exit because God's standard for His own people is a lot higher. The city in Diyarbakir, it's a large city, about 1.5 million people. So it's not a little village. We don't live in the sticks. But ironically, since a lot of them have been forced into the cities by the government for population control, because that's where the Kurds are active, many people have just come into the city by force. And so we have kind of a mega village going on. And people still living on their roofs and throwing trash out their windows, walking down the middle of the street. And you can see horse carts in the road and other things like that. So it's quite an interesting scenario. And so you see here big, tall apartments in the back, and yet people also living in the mud huts all mixed together. We live in the first flat of a 7-story apartment, which is what everybody lives in. And so we're privileged to be there now for the past 6 years. We've been had the joy of working with a church there that has local established leadership. And we've just in the last 2 or 3 years been able to have a legitimate place of worship, this building, which is really important. It's not obviously important for us here. You have churches littering the landscape. But this is the only church in 1,000 miles square, you know, in that whole region of southeastern Turkey. And the only church with its own building, too. What this creates is a lot of opportunities to share the gospel. In Turkey, when you turn 18 or 21, I don't know what it is in Texas. You know, in Texas, you want to go, they go drinking or they go to some bar, something they could never do until they're 18. Well, in Turkey, when you turn 18, you go to a church. That's the great forbidden thing to do. And so we have all these teenagers showing up at our church and thinking this is really cool, you know. And they're obviously quite scared. They're thinking they're going to get nabbed or get something happen to them while they're in there. But we have people come to our church on an average about 30 or 40 people a day. And that's Monday through Sunday. Every day of the week, people are just pouring through the church, asking questions. This is a small booklet that I wrote that answers some of these specific questions that they have about our faith. They misunderstand a lot about what we believe. Simple things as much as, you know, God. If God has a son, the Son of God, then He must have a wife. That's pretty simple logic. Well, you know, we have to try to explain that through for them. There's lots of other things they don't understand because their perception of Christianity is brought to them through the TV tube. So if you can imagine what your perspective of Christianity would be if you judge that on Hollywood. You know, everything, they assume that everybody west of them is a Christian. All Europeans, all Americans, they're all Christians. And so what they see on Hollywood, that's a good representation of a moral Christian life. Well, so we have to try to help clear that up and say, no, that's totally wrong. And so we spend a lot of time giving them a New Testament if possible, sharing the gospel with them, drinking some tea if we can. So the church building itself is a great center for ministry. In the last 3 or 4 years that it's been open, I think upwards of 30,000 New Testaments have gone out just from the church building. People have come and gone. And so it's a great sowing that's taking place, and we trust there's a great harvest to follow. We meet together on Sundays about 11 o'clock to have our worship. You can see some of the fellows here, and that we share the word there as well. Elias, one of the fellows here, has given his first message here. So it was an exciting time for us to see one of our students, disciples now, taking it by the reins and going ahead. We have a good, lively worship. What you might not know is one of the fellows here on the white here on the left-hand side, he's actually police, an undercover police. And the government asked if they could plant an undercover cop among us. We said, sure, we'd love to have a cop among us. And so he's been among us for several months, and then he started attending our soccer games, and then he started coming to our picnics and our midweek meeting, and he just about became a believer, and I guess the government figured it was time to pull him, so they moved him somewhere else. But it was amazing to watch his transformation, his attitude towards us change as he got to know us. And that's the case in Turkey in general. People don't know what Christians are. And in fact, when a young person might show interest in Christianity to come to church, they're afraid that they're going off to be an immoral Christian, you know. If their idea of Christianity is based on what they see in Hollywood, well, you and I would be afraid to get near a church too. So that's why they're awfully frightened. So it's important for people just to get to know us, to come and see us, who we are, what we do, and that we, you know, we ascribe to a moral standard that is much similar to what they would like to live themselves. So that's our Sunday morning worship. Downstairs they have children's church, and Sarah has now handed that off to some of the young people who manage that fairly well. And the older kids also have a good time downstairs in the basement of the church. The real time for the body, though, of the church is on Wednesday. Because on Sunday, you can imagine we have about 20 or 30 visitors, and the church itself isn't more than 60 individuals. So that kind of swamps the church. Everybody's talking with somebody, evangelizing somebody. And so it's important to have a time when the body gets together and we can really edify one another. So Wednesday is the day we do that. We meet at homes. This last year, we had the opportunity to split that into two now. So we have two Wednesday night meetings, and we hope to continue to reproduce that in the days and years to come. On holidays, we have especially a full house. People somehow hear that we're having an Easter or Christmas representation, and we invite a lot of our friends and relatives. And it's a good opportunity for them to hear the gospel in sometimes a creative fashion, like you have BBC Bethlehem here. But it's a way that they can hear the truth. Many of them have never even heard that Christ died on the cross. They figure he was just whisked up to heaven mysteriously. The kids also present their little songs, and it's a good opportunity to people to see that we are real people and that we have families and kids and all the rest. We try to get out and have picnics whenever we can as well so that the believers get used to the feel of, you know, we're open. We're not hiding away in a box anywhere. We are proud of what we believe in, and we're willing to put this outside and let people watch us if necessary, ask questions if necessary. So that's a lot of times we have these picnics in the spring or summer. This picnic, we got rained out about 15 minutes after I took this picture, but we finished our kebabs under the shelter. Some of the fellows, and let me give you a brief description of what it's like for them to become believers in the scenario where we live. Sedhat, for example, here comes from a very strict Kurdish background. His brother was killed as a guerrilla fighter, PKK fighter in the mountains. So his family is very loyal to the PKK party. And it was difficult for him. He at the same time found out that one of his great-great-grandmothers was from Armenian background. So that triggered a bit of a search in his heart and soul, and he came to church and started asking questions, started reading the Bible, and became very convinced. But then it was a tug-of-war. Is my PKK, my roots, more important, or is following Christ more important? And it was a tough decision. And when he chose Christ, he got a lot of pressure from his family. He had to leave home several times because the pressure was just so immense on him. Family, relatives, the whole clan jumping on his back and making him feel like he's a traitor to their family line and to their culture and to their people. So it's very difficult. Now, though he's faithfully serving the Lord, he's doing his military service, and you might pray for Sedhat that way. Pasha here was a real surprise. He came to church, and he was a hopeless case. He talked, 100 miles, 100 words a minute, and we figured he had no hope. And Ahmed said, don't even bother with him. But he just kept turning the corner. Every time we'd get on his case for anything, he'd repent and he'd come back around. That's an advantage we have there. Here, if somebody gets upset, they can just go to the church down the street. Well, there's no church down the street where we are. So we can be biblical and be strong and be tough with them and face them and confront them with their sin. And they have no option but to really repent, as the Bible commands them to do. And he kept turning that corner, and then we really saw him change so remarkably that one day he was actually going home. He lives in a very rough neighborhood, and they had a police check there because they have a lot of drugs and prostitution. And one of the police called him up and said, "Hey, Pasha, we haven't seen you around for a long time. Where are you hanging out anymore?" He says, "Well, I'm at church." And he says, "You got to be kidding." He says, "Yeah, Jesus has changed my life." He said, "Well, I have to send the rest of these young people over there too." So he's really turned it around now, and it's amazing to see how the Lord's worked in his life. Rojda here is a young gal who's had it very difficult too. Her father was trading drugs, got thrown in jail. Very difficult family. His mom worked in a bar. But when she became a believer, she brought her mom and her sisters to Christ. But her older brothers, they're real stinkers. And they kept being involved in drugs and other, clandestine activity. And they weren't very happy about them coming to church. And in fact, one time when I brought her back home, her older brother tried to stab me with a knife because he had told her she couldn't go to church anymore. After seeing that incident, obviously for me it was the first time anything like that had happened. But thinking, these poor young people like Rojda, they face this every single day. This is daily life for them. Going home, getting beat up, getting slapped around, getting cussed at. And that's just an amazing testimony to their faith and their commitment to Christ. So you might keep praying for Rojda, her family. She keeps witnessing to all her relatives and keeps bringing them by to church. So it's an encouraging testimony. And Dad here is another really encouraging testimony. He came to us one day fresh out of jail. Well, when he started telling his story, kind of gets the hairs on your back, your neck kind of go up on pointy. And they he was telling us that he was trained as a suicide bomber for the PKK. And he had been up in the mountains for about 10 years, training and doing deployment. He hadn't killed himself yet, thankfully. And at that time, he found a New Testament. And he just really fell in love with Christ. Later, he defected and he got put into jail. When he was in jail, his only desire was, when I get out of here, I want to go to a church and see what Christ is all about. So he showed up at our door. I just came from the mountains, from the PKK terrorists, and I just got out of jail, and I want to become a Christian. Wow. So we started taking him through some studies, and it was amazing to watch the Lord transform his life. He has a huge appetite for the Scriptures, and Randy's hoping that he'll be able to go up and find the ark for us up there in Mount Judy. We'll see how he does. He's all excited about doing that too. So, and Dad's just a really neat guy, and he's getting a new start in life this way. They see here in the back, he's a waiter of a really nice restaurant. What's really interesting is that he's on the totally different end of the spectrum. He was trained by the Hezbollah radical terrorist groups as a suicide bomber too. But the Hezbollah were used by the Turkish government to take out the PKK terrorists. And so these are guys trained to blow up each other. But now they're both in church worshiping the Lord together. So it's a beautiful testimony to what the Lord can and is doing out there. In the summers, we have vocation Bible school. It's difficult. A lot of gossip out there, thinking that we're brainwashing the kids. Some of the little stories that go around is that we baptize them and they come out midgets and other things like that. So they have really great ways of dissuading the kids from coming. But when they do come, and we did this last summer, it was upwards of 100, and we had it for 3 days. So it was a neat time to see the Lord work there. We in particular have worked with the youth for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's been neat to see the turnover. Many of them now are working with us, leading the youth group, because they've gained a lot of experience. And so you see here us eating on the floor every Sunday night, probably about right now. They're tearing up our house with some of the youth there. We eat on the floor as is local custom. But it's been a joy to see many of them go on and not just profess faith, but also lead others to Christ and now be serving in the church, taking on responsibility. And this last Christmas, we had the joy of marrying off one of our first youth to another very wonderful Christian gal. And all the youth were gathered for that, for a great celebration at our church. So it's nice to see the cycle go all the way through. Sarah spends a lot of her time discipling gals at our home. These are some of the gals that she's been working with, Melek there and then Sinem. Ahmed there is one of the elders of the church. So she spends a lot of time at home drinking tea, talking with them, dealing with them. Many of them have had very difficult pasts. We've found that many, if not all, of the young ladies that Sarah's dealt with at least have been molested to one degree or another. So it's quite rampant out in the region where we live. We also do a lot of hospitality. This is one of the families that comes and goes to our house often. It's still a Muslim family, but we have a good interaction with them. He's a carpenter, and they're very good friends, Hussein and Dilek. So you might pray for them. We've known them for a couple years now. They really like us, you know, and we like them. They respect our faith. We talk about Christianity regularly. And he's very disillusioned with Islam, still a little bit afraid of what others would say if he became a Christian. So you might pray that he would take that step of faith forward, Hussein and Dilek there with their kids. I spend a lot of time preparing lessons and teaching at our discipleship course. We have a little mini Bible school that goes throughout the whole year, teaching the New Testament and the Old Testament, practical and systematic theology, 4-hour lessons 2 times a week. And so it's at night, we'll get there and go from 6 to 10, straight going through the whole book of Genesis or something. So it's quite intense, but we try to do it in-house so that nobody gets any blown up ideas or expectations that, you know, if I finish this Bible school, I'm going to be a pastor somewhere or do something else. But they just continue plugged into their community and the church and not separate from that. We've seen, I think we did our 6th semester this last year. So it's nice to see some of these kids roll over now and be sharing and participating in the church ministry. But the most effective part and important part of this ministry to discipleship course has been the personal mentorship. We've had personal discipleship with every one of the students on a regular weekly basis. We get deep into their life and get all the crud out and talk about all the dirty laundry. So we really try to get hard with them and help them face difficulties in their lives. I also spend a lot of time on the road visiting people that are interested in the whole region. Here, Ali, I take some of the young people with us, graduates from our discipleship course. Here we are in Erzurum, a very difficult city up to the north, which is roughly about 1 million people, and yet not one church there. There's maybe a couple believers, people who are maybe interested, and if someone was there to follow up with them, there's a good number of people that could actually get together. When we get ready to go here, for example, we have a list of about 100 different names, people who have written in at different times and have shown interest. So we'll call them all, and we'll get sweared out by some. We'll get, others that have a lot of interest, and others that say, "Where are you? I've been waiting for someone to contact me for 5 years now." So you have a whole range of people. And so we go up, then we usually meet with about 20, 25 people on just one day. We divide it up quickly and get in different groups. So if somebody was actually living there, a family that could just start contacting these, I think a group of people that were interested would form quickly. And maybe a church could emerge there in Arizona. But otherwise, it's a very difficult city, very strong and staunch Muslim city of that region. So we're praying that the Lord will prepare a family there. When we were up there recently with an Indian brother, we met Irfan, who just really quiet, really reserved. But when he started catching the gist of the gospel, he had lots of questions, a lot of interest, and we still email back and forth. So he's one of the real promising fellows there in Erzurum. South of us is another city called Mardin, and it's a very ancient Syrian Orthodox capital, and they have these old limestone homes. I mean, there's a group of believers there even now that are trying to get together on a regular basis, and we try to aid them since we're only an hour away. So you can see them here. Trying to encourage them. We went down south, you see Randy again, to some of the villages. There's a couple villages that have believers in them, and they try to, they're always calling us, wanting us to come and encourage them, have a little meeting with them. So there's a whole host of towns, cities, villages in our region of people that are interested and want to hear from us. We went up to Vaughan this last month with some of the graduates from our discipleship course and had a questionnaire prepared, and they were doing some open-air evangelism. The police got to us early on, but as in most cases, all they're trying to do is intimidate you. They have no way of stopping you, and you have entire right to do whatever you're doing. So it's important for us to be able to stand strong and say, "No, we don't need special permission for this. We're going to do this." And so they back down after that. So some of our youth here are doing that. If you look at the whole region, though, in the southeastern region where we are, most of the churches in Turkey are on the west. In Istanbul, which is a city of 15 million people, there's about 15 churches, which is still a drop in the bucket for that many people. But as you move east, we are the only established church out there. There's several home groups in the region, but not very much. And so our real heart and desire is to see churches, first of all, multiplied locally in Diyarbakir, and then begin to multiply churches in the region as we see pockets of believers develop. So that's really our goal, is to create a network of churches and be helping each other. Obviously, those churches, when established, will be autonomous. But we want to be a big brother to them, as they would say in Turkey, and help them get on their feet. So that's really our goal, and that's what we have maybe for the next 15, 20 years ahead of us, working on that. We had the privilege just this last spring of gathering together the believers and leaders in that whole region going all the way to central Turkey and have a leadership conference. And it was a special time to edify all the believers and encourage one another. So the church building there is a great help that way, since we're the only one that owns one. We also participate in children's camps. There's a nationwide children's camp in the summer. We were there just before we came here. In this place in central Turkey called Cappadocia. If you ever get a chance to go, it's a beautiful, beautiful country. A lot of old churches hidden away in caves. They estimate about 12,000 churches scattered across that whole region there. It's quite amazing. So we were there, and they, of course, poked fun of us, throwing wet sponges at the teachers. But right after that, we went on over to the Southeastern Family Camp, which is about close to 300 people gathered together in the Mediterranean. And these are churches across the whole region. It's kind of nice, when we may all be different churches, different maybe even quote-unquote denominations, which there really aren't any in Turkey, but we all work as one body. We do things together as much as we can since we're so few. And so here we gathered together the youth. We had them do all kinds of fun activities in the ocean there in the Mediterranean, like trying to take this sunken boat across to a place as a team. But these are groups that we've been, youth that we've been working with for the last 5 years. And so we've seen many of them now grow up, go on, be married, mature, and serve in their churches. So it's really rewarding to work with them again. This brings us to a very difficult time that we had to face just this last April. In April 18, when three of our brothers were murdered there in Malatya. Malatya is just 2.5 hours northwest from where our church is at. They had a couple home groups that they were working on there. They had a publishing distribution house that they were based out of. And some young men had visited their Easter program and had shown some interest. And so then they showed up at their office again, claiming to have some questions. And so after much discussion, probably a heated discussion, these guys pulled knives on our three brothers and then began to threaten them and began to torture them, and were telling them that they had to return to Islam and had to, you know, renounce Christianity, which they denied. When they denied to do that, they didn't want to do that. They began to threaten them further, and when they saw that the police were arriving or that was creating a bit of a commotion in the region, they pulled their knives and slit the throats of these three men. And so all three were found dead a couple hours later. And when we heard the news in Diyarbakir, obviously it was just earth-shattering to us, because they are very close friends of us. You know, what we are in Diyarbakir, they are in Malatya. They're the only believers in Malatya. And we knew them very well. They came very often to our church to minister to us. And we were up there often encouraging them, having picnics together, camps together, conferences together. So it was an amazing experience to go through. And at first it was really scary. In fact, Jengiz, one of the elders, when we were on our way up there, he thought we were going to die and get killed ourselves, you know. It really shakes your world. But we learned so much through this experience. It was really a remarkable experience that I want to talk about a little on here. Nejati here was a pastor of the fellowship up there. He's in the back there in orange, and he's left behind a wife and two children. And you might continue to pray for them. It's not going to be easy for them, even though the rest of the world forgets. They will not ever forget.